The Perek continues to talk about a olive press and a wine press, and different topics that have been discussed throughout the Masechta, really, are going to be mentioned in these last couple of Mishnayos in relation to an olive press and a wine press. The saliva of an Am Haaretz is considered to be Tomei, out of doubt and concern that he is possibly a Zov. A Zov is somebody who has a severe level of impurity, and any liquid that comes out of such a person is a source of impurity. Over here we're talking about a Am Haaretz, an ignorant person who hasn't been purified especially. And such a person was standing and talking to somebody else on the edge of a pit of wine. The nitzot sinoyrom epiv, and a piece of saliva flew out of his mouth, and sofik higia labor, sofik lo higia, there is a doubt as to whether or not the saliva reached the pit of wine and entered into it or not. And the option that not is that it landed on the rim of the pit. So if this was a pit of oil, for example, since the oil makes the edge and the rim of the pit slippery, so even if it landed there, we assume that it ended up in the pit anyway. So it would definitely make the oil tomei. But since over here we're talking about a pit of wine, it's assumed that if it landed on the edge, on the rim, that it did not end up slipping into the pit itself. So the doubt with which you are faced is where the saliva ended up landing. We're talking about a private area, so based on the basic rule that we've seen throughout the Masechta, that a doubt that occurs in a private area is ruled as being Tomei, one would have thought that over here it should be ruled Tomei out of doubt. However, the Mishnah does not rule like that, rather Sfeiko Tohar, its doubt is ruled as being pure. One explanation for why this would be the case is because it's considered to be tumosh ein lo mokaim. It's a source of impurity that is not resting anywhere, rather it's flying through the air. And in such a case, even if it occurs in a private area, we learnt that the doubt would be ruled stringently and it would be considered tomei. Alternatively, it could be a more simple logic that we assume that the saliva doesn't travel so far. So we assume that it landed closer to the person rather than further away, and that's why we assume that it didn't actually land inside the pit. Mishnah Zayin, Hazinuf is a bar, somebody who draws wine from a pit of wine. He fills up different barrels from the pit of wine. And in the first scenario of the Mishnah, we're talking about where he dips the barrels themselves into the pit, and he fills those barrels up with wine. Nimtzah Sheretz Bereshayna, and after he fills up all of the barrels, he finds a Sheretz in the first barrel that he filled up. A Sheretz is a small dead animal that's a source of impurity, and the wine in that barrel is now certainly Tomei. The question is, what about the wine in all of the other barrels? The Mishnah rules that Kulon Tomeis, all of the wine is considered to be Tomei, because since there's a Sheretz in the first barrel, we've essentially got two options in front of us. Either the Sheretz really was in the pit originally, and when he filled up the barrel, it came into the first barrel. Or the Sheretz was originally inside the first barrel, but since he dipped that barrel itself into the pit, so the Sheretz would have had contact with the wine in the pit and made it all Tomei. So whatever happens, all of the wine in all of the barrels is considered to be Tomei. Now there's room to ask that surely there's a third option. It could be that the Sheretz fell into that barrel after he drew the wine from the pit into the barrel. In which case, only that barrel of wine will be Tomei and the rest of the barrels of wine will have remained pure. The reason why that is not an option is because we're discussing a case where the person is still holding onto that barrel. And therefore, we assume that if a Sheretz fell into it afterwards whilst he was holding it, then he would have noticed. The fact that he didn't see it fall into it means that it must have fallen into it earlier on. And since according to both options that remain, all of the wine in the pit will be Tomei, so therefore all of the wine that's in the barrels now is Tomei. However, b'acharona, if the Sheretz is found in the last barrel that he filled up with wine, he Tomei'a, that barrel is Tomei, v'chulon tahoros, whereas all of the other barrels are considered to be pure, because in this case, there is an option that the Sheretz was in this last barrel all of the time, And when he dipped the barrel into the pit, it's true that he made any wine that remains there Tomé, but at least the wine that was taken out of the pit earlier on is Tahar. So we've got a doubt over here. It could be that the Sheretz was in the pit all along, and just that it came out with the last barrel. In that case, all of the wine is Tomé. But the second option is that the Sheretz was in the last barrel, in which case the first barrels of wine are pure. So what do we do in such a case of doubt? The Mishnah rules that he Tomeh v'chulon Tahiros. That barrel is Tomei, but the rest of the barrels are pure. And this is based on the rule that we have learnt again a number of times in the Masechta, that Kolat Tomei Skashas Mitzi Oson. We always assume that that source of impurity was always in that same location. This is based on the idea of Chazoka de Hashtar. If we see something in front of us right now, we assume that it was in that same situation earlier on as well. And since right now the Sheretz is in this last barrel, we assume that it was always situated in this barrel, as opposed to having been situated in the pit originally. Now the Mishnah limits the rules that we've learned so far in this Mishnah. Amosai, when is all of this true? Bizman shu zoyif achas v'achas, in a situation where he draws the wine into the buckets, he fills out the buckets, the barrels, with wine from the pit, each one individually. Meaning he dips each of the barrels into the pit and fills it up with wine. Aval imoyal zoyif b'machatz. But if he was filling up each of the barrels using a large ladle of sorts, and that's the only thing that he dipped into the pit, and he poured that into each of the barrels, then nimtzal sheretz b'achas mehen, if a sheretz is found in any one of the barrels, he tameh b'levad, only that barrel of wine is considered to be tameh. But all of the other barrels will remain pure, because this essentially is like the last case in the first part of the Mishnah. We've got a doubt as to whether the Sheretz was in the barrel all along, or it was in the pit. And if it was in the barrel all along, then only that barrel is Tomei. And the concept of Chazaka de Hashtar, the rule of Kol HaTomeis K'shas Mitzi Oson, states that we assume that the Sheretz was always where it is right now. So since right now we see the Sheretz in this barrel, we assume that all along it was in the barrel. And only that barrel is Tomei, whereas the other barrels of wine will remain pure. So he Tomei Abulvad, only that barrel will be Tomei. Continues the Mishnah, Amosai, when is this true? Bizmanshu Baidek Velo Mechase. In a situation where he checks all of the barrels before pouring wine into them, but he didn't cover the barrels in the meantime while he was filling up the other barrels. Oy Mechase, or it could be that he did cover all of the barrels, but Velo Baidek, he didn't check any of them if there was a Sheretz inside of them or not. In both of these two cases, there's always an option that the Sheretz was indeed in that barrel, and it didn't come from the pit itself. If he didn't check the barrels, obviously it could be it was there. And even if he did check it, since he didn't cover it, so it could be that in the meantime, whilst he was filling up one of the other barrels, so a Sheretz fell into the barrel that he already checked earlier on. So since there's an option that the Sheretz was in that barrel as opposed to be coming from the pit, we rule that only that barrel is Tomei. Oya Beidko Machase, however, if he both checked each of the barrels at the beginning, and after checking the barrels and seeing that there was no Sheretz, he covered each of those barrels, and only when he came to pouring the wine into those barrels did he uncover them so that he will be able to fill it up. And then he covered it again. And later on, v'nimtza sheretz b'chovis, he finds a sheretz in one of the barrels, hakol tomei. So now he needs to assume that all of the wine in all of the barrels is tomei, because it certainly came from the wine in the pit. He knows as a fact that the barrels themselves did not have the sheretz inside of them, so it must be that the sheretz fell into the barrel together with the wine that was being poured into it. And that means that the pit itself contained a sheretz, and all of the wine in it became tomei. What happens if he finds a sheretz babur in the pit of wine itself? So now our question is whether the sheretz fell into it from the beginning, so all of the wine is tomei, or maybe it only fell into it now. The Mishnah says, I call tomei, all of the wine that is in all of the barrels is considered to be tomei. Because we're talking about a case where he covered the pit itself as well, except for when he was actually filling up the barrels or he was taking out some wine from the pit, and because of that, there's no possibility that the sheretz fell into the pit in the meantime. It must have been that it was there originally, and therefore all of the wine is considered to be tomei, and likewise, but machatz, if the sheretz is found in the ladle Hakol Tomei, all of the wine in the barrels is considered to be Tomei, because it can't be that the sherets fell into the ladle whilst he was filling up the wine, or later on, because he was holding onto the ladle all of the time. He would have seen the sherets fall into it. So if he finds the sherets later on in the ladle, it must be that it was there all of the time. And since he filled up all of the barrels with the ladle, so all of the barrels must have become Tomei from the sherets. Or all of the wine would have become Tomei from the sherets. Mishnah Ches. The final Mishnah of the Masechta continues to talk about a olive press, a wine press, in relation to, again, a different topic that was discussed in the Masechta, and that is a private area and a public area. Because as we know, the general rule is that a doubt that occurs in a private area is in general ruled strictly as being Tomei, whereas a tumma doubt that occurs in a public area, which in general is defined as an area that there are at least three people, then the doubt is ruled leniently. We assume that the item did not become Tomei and it remained Tahar like it has been until now. This Mishnah shows that inside the olive press or the wine press itself, it could be that part of that area is considered to be a public area, and part of that building, that inside, is considered to be a private area. After the grapes are pressed, there would be the skins and the other parts of the grape that remain that would be piled up, and they would place very heavy round blocks on top of them, kind of round stones which are very heavy, in order to squeeze out any last juice that they could from these grapes. And this would require lots of people, since it was so heavy. And there would be at least three, there would be more people in general who would be part of that process. And because of that, the area of the wine press where that would occur is considered to be a public area. Ben ha'egulim lagas, between these very large round blocks and the pile of grape skins, Rishus ha'rabim, that is considered to be a public area. Kerem shlifnei ha'beitzrim, the part of the vineyard that is still in front of the harvesters, meaning the part of the vineyard that has not yet been harvested, Rishus HaYochid, is considered to be a private area, because people don't walk and go through that area of the vineyard that hasn't yet been harvested. But Shel'achar HaBeitzrim, the part of the vineyard that has already been harvested, and is behind the harvesters, literally, Rishus HaRabim, that is considered to be a public area. Because as the Mishnah explains, Amosai, when is that the case? We're discussing a case where the public come in from one entrance to the vineyard and go out through the other. There is a break in the fence that goes around the vineyard that allows people to walk through the vineyard and exit the vineyard directly opposite that break in the fence, because on the other side of the vineyard there's also a break in the fence for them to go through. And since there is a path where the public can go through this vineyard, so that part is considered to be a public area. Alright, the next half of the Mishnah. Kelei Beis Habad, the utensils that are used inside of the olive press, Vishalgas, or inside of the wine press. Ho'ekel, this is an example of something that was used in the olive press. It was a kind of basket that was made of a type of netting. And after the olives were pressed, the remaining part of the olives were placed there, and once again they would place heavy items on top of it to squeeze out any remaining oil from the olives. Very similar to what we discussed at the beginning of this Mishnah with regards to the grapes. If these become Tomei, so in general a utensil that becomes Tomei can be purified by dipping it into a mikveh. However, the issue over here is that these utensils have absorbed a lot of oil and wine. And if that is Tomei, then even if you purify the utensil, later on some of the oil and wine will come out of the walls. It's been absorbed into the walls, and it will later partly come out, and it will just make the utensil Tomei automatically again. So what do we need to do in order to make sure that that doesn't happen? Bizman Shein Shel Eitz, if it's made out of wood, the particular utensil under discussion, then Menagvon, it's enough to dry it properly and thoroughly, to wash it up, and then to dip it into the mikveh, Vehein Tehorin, they will be purified. Bizman Shein Shel Gemi, if it's made out of a rubber-like material, Meyashnon Kol Shnei Masar Chodesh, you should age it, meaning you shouldn't use it for a period of 12 months. And then anyway, the nature of the liquid that has been absorbed into the walls changes, and even if it were to come out of the walls, it would no longer make the tea tame. Alternatively, you could apply boiling water to the walls of this utensil. You could pour some boiling water onto it, and then that would cause any of the liquid that had been absorbed into the walls to come out. And then you can clean it and dip it into the mikveh to purify it, and there's no longer a concern that tommy liquid will later on come out of the walls and make it tommy. Rabbi Yossi says there's a different solution in the Sonam Bishabilis HaNohar. If you place the utensil in a strong stream of a river, that is also a very thorough washing of that utensil. It will also cause the liquid that had been absorbed into the walls of the utensil to come out, and therefore you can do that, and it's not going to come out later on, because it will all come out now, and dayo, that is sufficient, and all you need to do after that is to dip it into the mikveh, and it will be purified. Solik maseches tayas mazel tov. We begin with maseches mikvois. Mikvois is the plural for mikveh. A mikveh is a body of water that has the ability to purify people and objects when they are immersed fully, with every single part of them touching the water. There are also some other purposes of a mikveh. For example, when somebody converts to become Jewish, they need to immerse themselves fully in a mikveh. Certain items that are used together with food, if they are bought from somebody who serves idols, or possibly any non-Jew, one also needs to dip those into a mikveh before using them. But the most primary use of a mikveh is in order to purify people or items that have become tamei. Now, the Torah talks about a mikveh and a mayon. A mayon is a natural spring that is flowing, or a body of water that is still, eventually it reaches the source of the spring. It's still connected to its source. There are certain people who have a severe level of impurity who can only be purified via going into a mayon. There are also some other laws that differ between a mikveh and a mayon. For example, a mikveh must contain at least a volume of 40 se'ah, which we're going to go with one measurement, is roughly around 700 square liters, around 200 gallons. If a person is being purified in the mikveh, then this is a requirement mid'oraisa. If it's just an object that is being purified in the mikveh, then mid'oraisa, according to the Torah, even a very small amount of water, a revius, which is smaller than a cup worth of water, that is sufficient, as long as it's a small item that can be totally surrounded by the water at a moment. However, mid'rabbanon, even items that are being purified can only be purified if they are put into a mikveh that is at least the size of 40 se'ah, at least the volume of 40 se'ah. On the other hand, if an item is being purified in a mayon, in a natural spring that is still attached, the body of water is still attached to its source, the spring, then if it is an item, an object that is being purified, then there is no requirement that it be put into a mayon that contains at least 40 se'ah. Most understand that if a person is being purified in a mayon, so then we would require 40 se'ah. So practically speaking, the only difference between a mikveh and a mayon will be with regards to purifying an object. Now, it's learned from a comparison in the Torah between a mikveh and a mayon, that just like a mayon is in the ground, it's attached to the spring that comes from the ground, so too a mikveh, which is a collection of water that is not connected to any source, it also must be on the ground. So if one has a very large container that is above the ground, and there's water contained inside of that container, then it is invalid. The mikveh needs to be in the ground, in a hole in the ground. As well as that, the mikveh cannot be flowing. It has to be still water. This is another difference between a mikveh and a mayon. And another very important law that is learnt from that comparison between a mikveh and a mayon is that the water must arrive in the mikveh by natural means. So either that means that the rain falls into the mikveh by itself, or the water flows on the ground into the mikveh. But if somebody fills up a container with water and then pours that into the mikveh, this is known as mayim she'uvim, drawn water, and that is invalid for the mikveh. We're going to learn lots of details about these laws. Once there is enough water, there's 40 se'ah of valid water of the mikveh, so then you can add as much mayim shuvim as you like, and it won't invalidate the mikveh. But at least for the initial 40 sa'ah of water that make up the minimum amount that the mikveh needs, at least the vast majority of it cannot be mayim shuvim. One last concept that we're going to introduce before we begin the Masechta, and this is a concept which already from the beginning of the Masechta the Mishnayos are going to talk about, is the concept of hashaka. Hashaka literally means kissing. It refers to when two different bodies of water are connected. And halachically speaking, we would view them as being like one large body of water. And this can have a number of different ramifications. For example, if there is a body of water that is too small, if it is connected to a body of water that is a mikveh, so this would be considered to be a part of the mikveh, so you could purify things even in that smaller body of water. As well as that, water itself is the only liquid that is able to be purified if it becomes tamei. How so? Well, as soon as, if let's say somebody has a container of tamei water, if he lowers down that container into a mikveh such that the surface of the container comes into contact with the rest of the mikveh, then the mikveh will purify that water as well. Because at that moment, we consider it to be as if that water is a part of the water of the mikveh. Even though it's in a container, so any water that's in a container is invalid to be a mikveh. Since it's connected to a body of water that is a valid mikveh, so even that water would now become part of the mikveh and also be valid. This is a concept of hashaka. Now, we mentioned earlier on that midoraisa, according to the Torah, even a revius, a very small amount of water, is considered to be a valid mikveh. Of course, as long as it's in the ground. We're not talking about a container over here, but if there is a hole in the ground that is very small, even a puddle in the ground that contains at least a revius of water, according to the Torah, this is considered to be have the status of a mikveh. If there is an object that is small enough that it can be totally immersed inside that small body of water, then according to the strict letter of the law of the Torah, it could be purified in that small amount of water. However, midrabbanan, they require the larger volume of 40 sa'ar to purify anything. However, the status of the body of water itself is still considered to be a mikveh. With regards to the question of whether these items can be purified in that mikveh, so we say that midrabbanan they can't. But the object itself of that body of water remains a mikveh. What difference does that make? The law is that a mikveh cannot be impure. Any body of water that is in the ground, just like the ground itself cannot become impure, water which is inside of the ground also is not able to become tamei. And this law, this feature of a mikveh, is true even with Rabbanon, because they didn't take away the actual status of the mikveh from this body of water. And so the Masechta begins, Sheish Malis b'mikvois, there are six different levels of mikvois, these different bodies of water, zoda malam izoi, the zoda malam izoi. This one is on a higher level than this, and this is on a higher level than this. Meaning the Mishnah is going to list them starting from the lowest level of mikveh that has the least ability of purity, as it were, as we are going to see. Megvoim, puddles of water that are in the ground, this is the lowest level of mikveh, because midrabbanon, this is not able to purify anything, however, it still has the status of a mikveh itself, such that the puddle itself is going to be pure. Even if a source of impurity touches that puddle of water, it will remain tahar, pure, as long as it is in the ground. The next few Mishnayos are going to discuss details of this lowest form of mikveh. The law is that even once the water is taken out of the ground, such that it's no longer considered to be a mikveh, if it is not taken out of the ground with a particular purpose or intention in mind, in such a case, it does not lose its pure status. We consider it to be, just like it has been until now, unable to become tamei. However, if somebody removes the water from the small puddle or the small hole in the ground deliberately, then it would now gain the ability to become tamei. So the Mishnah says, Shosa tamei, if a tamei person drinks from that water that's in a small hole in the ground, he obviously wants to take the water out of the ground and he's drinking it. And although he ends up drinking most of the water that he takes out of the hole with his mouth, naturally there are going to be a few drops of water that end up dripping from his mouth and from his lips back into that hole with water in it. as he's lifting his face out of the water. Now, that water was removed from the hole deliberately, and it became tome by touching this tome person's lips. So the situation is where we have some tome drops of water falling back into the hole, which has some water that is still remaining there. Now, this itself is not going to be a problem, because, as we mentioned, water that is in the ground cannot become tome. And quite the opposite, since there are only a few drops of tome water, there is a concept over here called the bittul beroiv, where the tome drops of water are nullified by the majority of this mixture of water, which is pure. And therefore, as long as the water remains in that hole, it is all pure. However, bittul beroiv doesn't turn the impure drops into being pure. It's just that in the current state, we have a mixture, and the vast majority of the mixture is pure, so the overall status which is given to that water is pure. But as soon as the water is lifted out of that hole, and the water now has the ability to become tome, now what occurs is quite the opposite, because in general, if there is even one drop of tome water that touches a lot of tahor water, it would actually make the entire mixture tome. It's all considered to be touching something that is tome, so it all becomes tome. It's not relevant to talk about nullifying the tome drop, because it's the opposite. The tome drop is touching all of the tahor water and makes it all tome. It turns it into being tome. So as soon as the water gets the ability to become tome, now it all becomes tome. And it emerges that v'shasa tahor, if a tahor person drinks some of the water from that hole afterwards, then tome, that person will become tome, because the law is, if somebody drinks water, liquid that is tome, midrabanon, they themselves become tome. And as we explained, as soon as the water is lifted up out of that hole, it gains the ability to become tome, and since there are probably some of those original tome drops included in the part of the water that he is drinking now, so the tome drops will make all of the water tome, and the person who is drinking that tome water will become tome himself. Likewise, shasa tome, if somebody who is tome drinks from that water, so again, since some drops go back into the water, and those drops became tome by touching the person's lips, so as long as the water is still in the ground, it is all tahar, but as soon as Umile bikhli tahar, if somebody fills up a container with water from that hole, and the container is pure, as soon as the water is lifted up out of the hole, now it gains the ability to become tome, and since it includes some drops of water that are actually tome, all of it will become tome, and now we have water that is tome that is touching this utensil, so the utensil itself becomes tome. And the third example of the Mishnah is shasa tome, if somebody who is tome drinks from that water, and then the drops which go back into the hole make the water which is remaining tome. But in the meantime, as long as the water is all attached to the ground, so it doesn't have the ability for it to become tome. But what happened next is that v'nofal kikoshel truma, a loaf of truma bread, fell into that small hole of water, and then he lifted up that bread from the hole. Im hidiach, if he sort of washes and rubs the water on the loaf, he's now deliberately using that water, so that gives it the ability to become tome, and the tome drops will make all of that water tome, and that will in turn make the loaf of bread tome as well. Im lo yidiach, however, if he didn't rub and wash the loaf of bread with that water, so then it's like a case of water that is removed from the hole, not deliberately. And he's not using that water at all, and therefore it still does not have the ability to become tome. So we're still at that stage where, quite the opposite, the water that does not have the ability to become tome at all nullifies the tome drops, so that all of the water is tahor, pure.